consequently, we will be covering fewer verses because there is so much repetition. Again and again and again in the Proverbs, we find such statements as seek counsel, the righteous man shall inherit the earth, and such statements, common statements, and they're very repetitious. And the farther we go, the more we'll skip, and the fewer verses that we'll dwell on. For example, look at chapter 21 and verse 2. It says, every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord pondereth the hearts. Well, we've mentioned that over and over again, how that God sees what we do. In verse 3 of chapter 21, to do justice and judgment is more acceptable to the Lord than sacrifice, and a high look and a proud heart, the plowing of the wicked is sin. We've already discussed those things as pride and justice and so forth, and so in general we'll skip the ones where we've discussed something similar before. Now I think we left off with verse 21, did we not, young people? Verse 19, let's see. He that goeth about as a talebearer revealeth secrets, therefore meddle not with him that flattereth his lips. I checked the original this afternoon. First, let me pray. Father, help us as we study. We need to know where to stop, and somebody might need some particular thing. We'll need wisdom to know exactly where to go and stop and how long to stay on each point. So call to our attention. All of this is simply ad-libbing. It's simply extemporaneous speaking. We have no outline. We have no planned course. We just take the Word of God and pray thy help. We study it, of course, but we need to know where to stop and what to spend the most time on. So give us wisdom, heavenly wisdom. Amen. Now, I checked the original on verse 19. It says, therefore meddle not with him that flattereth his lips. The word flatter there is a little more than what we'd call flattering, like we'd say, oh, you look so pretty today, you look so nice today, what a fine fellow you are. It doesn't mean flatter, it means extravagant. It means extravagant. What it says is, don't mess with a fellow that talks all the time. That's what it says. Don't associate too much with the gossip, or any at all, for that matter, it says. What it means is that we should not meddle or should not associate with him that is extravagant, that talks about people and is a gossip. We should not even associate with that kind of a person. This is what verse 19 means. Now down to verse 21 for our discussion tonight. How many of you young people have your notebooks or pencils and papers taking notes? Would you raise them up, please? Or your hand one? All of you? All right. What number are we on now? 122. So this is the 122 proverb we've studied so far and things we've learned from them. And are we starting on 122 now? All right. Starting on 122. Are we starting on 122? Are we? Yes, sir. All right. Fine. Thank you. Okay. 122 is verse 21. An inheritance may be gotten hastily at the beginning, but the end thereof shall not be blessed. Now I have for this one right now, take no shortcuts to success. Now we may have discussed this a bit, but I want to say a word about it tonight again. Take no shortcuts to success. Maybe I said they, maybe not. At least I've stated somewhere lately. And that is this. Maybe the Sunday school outline, maybe that's what it is. But anything that is worthwhile has a big price on it. Now, if you want to wear a suit from the rescue mission, we have some suits there. They'll keep you warm, and for most part, they'll keep you looking rather well. But if you want to wear, you can get that, if you can't afford anything better, you can get that free. Now, you can get some mighty nice clothes at a place like Robert Hall. I have worn many Robert Hall suits. I have a sport coat right now that I got at Robert Hall. You can get them, and you can get certainly adequate clothing. How many of you have something on tonight that came from Robert Hall? Oh, you got it from Robert Hall, and you tore the thing out and put Jack Fox on the inside. That's what you did. But anyway, if you want to, you can get good stuff. Now, if you want to wear the best clothing, you'll have to pay the best price. You get what you pay for. Now, the same thing is true with whatever goal you have in life. Now, I think every person ought to have a goal in life, every young person especially. You ought to know where you're going. I think it's a good idea to find out as early as you possibly can the will of God for your life and start going in that direction. I'm so glad that in my own life that I knew as a young man what I was going to do. And I pointed in the direction. All that I did pointed toward that direction. And, for example, I've been preaching now well over a license to preach over half of my life. And I've actually been preaching about half of my life. I've been pastoring churches just about half of my life. Now, why is this? Why can many fellows right now at my age are still in college. That's true. And seminary. And some come down these aisles and surrender to preach the gospel. God's called them to preach, and they're older than I am. Now, why is this? It's because, as a young man, God spoke to me, and I yielded to God's call. And I started laying the foundation. And I'm so glad that I started young so I could lay the foundation. Now, have your goal. Know where you're going. Now, when I take a trip, I do this. I get ulcers doing it, but I do it. If I'm taking a trip, I measure about how long it's going to take me to get to a certain town. Does anybody else do that? I sort of figure out how long it's going to take me to get to a certain town. I probably have a little schedule all the way. Anybody else do that? Well, I'm glad there are others that have ulcerated stomachs too. But and I get so frustrated if I'm not on schedule. I'm like a bus driver. I want to stay on schedule. Now, in our life, we ought to do this. There ought to be goals out, things we're shooting at. What are you living for? What's the purpose of it all? And especially for young people, you ought to know where you're going. Now, look, find out where you're going. But don't bypass any stops on the way. Whatever you're going to be, you prepare yourself to be and prepare yourself well to be. Now, if you're going to be a preacher, for example, you ought to have a good foundation. You ought to study hard. If you possibly can, you ought to go to school. And you ought to take no shortcuts. Shortcuts are usually long cuts. And especially is this true in the matter of success in a life. You want to live one life, lay a good foundation for it. Over here next door, we're building a building. For literally weeks, we did not see any evidence of building at all. Not at all. They were digging. They were pouring concrete. They were laying footings. They're putting in the steel connections and so forth. Why? Laying a good foundation. Don't take a shortcut. I made a mistake as a young preacher, a tragic mistake. Did not affect me, but affected many young preachers. And I'm sorry, and I'll never forgive myself for it. When I started preaching as a kid, and then I got a little older and began to have a larger works, I had preacher boys. I've always had preacher boys. I've always, in my ministry, had many young preachers in my churches. Even way down in the country, I had young preachers. But I made the mistake of not leading my young preachers, of getting a good foundation. I'd take a fellow been saved for 6 months and put him out pastoring a church. I'd help him start a church. I'd go out and get a tent and preach a few nights for him and get him started under the tent and let him have it, take it over. He didn't have two sermons and he had the church. And he wasn't ready for it. He didn't have the foundation. He was taking a shortcut. He didn't go to school. And sometimes I encourage them not even to go to school. I'm not going to go to school. School has ruined as many preachers as it's helped. But in all other things being equal, a young man, listen, a young man's going to be a preacher, he ought to go to school. Now, if you're 45, 50 years old and God's called you to preach, you may have to get your gun loaded and run quickly. But the average young man, you ought to get all the grounding you can. You ought to get all the foundation you can. And you ought not to take any shortcuts to success. Always people are going to take the shortcut. Going to get rich fast. Going to be successful fast. Most of these fellows that have some kind of gimmick to go up fast, they come down about as fast as they went up. And so be sure that you take no shortcut. Lay a good foundation for whatever you're going to be. All right, now then, let's go to the next one. Verse 25, please. This is one of the few that divide the thought in the verse. It's very unusual. Most of these, the verse stands on its own. But now in this verse, it has two thoughts in one verse. The first one, it is a snare to the man who devoureth that which is holy. It is a snare to a man who devoureth that which is holy. All right, number 123, I guess it is. Write it down. Start now as a child. Well, write it down. Start now and tithe. Write it down. Start now and tithe. This is talking about that which is holy and set apart to God. Now, in the Bible days, people didn't make money, but they had the increase of their property. Here's a man that had an orchard. He gave a tithe of all his grapes. Here's a man that raised truck farming. He gave a tithe of all his vegetables. Here's a man that had an orange grove. He gave a tithe of all his oranges. Here's a man that had stock. He gave a tithe of all the stock that was born. All the increase. Now, I'll be real honest with you. If you have a garden, according to Bible language, over a tenth of what you have in your garden belongs to God. Now, you could take it to rescue mission. You could give it to Pacific Garden Mission or our mission, or you could give it to the poor people, or you could give it to the church to distribute for you, or you could sell it and give a tenth of it to the Lord. But one tenth of it belongs to God. Back in those days, they didn't have any dollars and half dollars and quarters, nickels and dimes and so forth. It was just the increase. Now look, young people, children, 5, 4, 6, 7, 8, 10, 15, however old you are, start right now giving God 10% of everything that comes into your hand. Everything. Start now tithing. Now, if you're 35 and not tithing, start now. If you're 65 and not tithing, start now. Now, here's why. It is the snare to the man who devoureth that which is holy. What's talking about? What about eating? Here's a man that raised, what kind of vegetables they eat in the Middle East? Okay, man that raised grapes. Here's a man that had a grape vineyard. And so he didn't give a tenth of his grapes. So he took his grapes and devoured them. He ate them. And the Bible says, as he did, they became a snare to him because he was eating something that was holy. And brother, the fact, one tenth of our increase is holy. And when you take the tenth and buy yourself a hamburger with it, you are devouring that which is holy, and there's a snare going to be laid for you. Now look, you had better, if you know what's good for you, you better start giving God 10% of everything you get an increase on. Everything. Now, it is a snare. It is a sin. You are eating something holy. It's God's. It is set apart. It is holy, sacred. And when you take the tenth, which is holy, you lay a snare for yourself and you mark it down, you are not going to get by with eating that which is holy. What's talking about? All right, now look, young folks, you start now. When you get a dime, you give God a penny of it. You get a dollar, you give God a dime of it. Better still, give him 11 cents and pledge faith. You get $10, give God a dollar or more. Start now and be able to say someday that you've never earned a dime of which God did not get a penny. Let's go to the last part of it. And after vows to make inquiry. It is a snare to the man who devoureth that which is holy, and after vows to make inquiry. The first half of that, or 123, is give God the tithe. And the second half of that is this. Do not make commitments you know you cannot fail. What it says here, and after vows to make inquiry. Now, it's talking about the same thing. It's talking about giving God the tithe. It's talking about the usage of your money. It is talking about making commitments of money that you cannot fulfill. Not talking about the tithe, because you're supposed to give God the tithe, and you can fulfill that. If you can't fulfill it, you're still supposed to do it. But he's simply saying, look, too many of you are making commitments you can't fulfill. You're taking God's part to do it. You're taking that which is holy to fulfill your commitment with, and that's not right. Now, here's what I'm saying, and I've said this before, but now listen to me. It is wrong, it is dirt wrong, for you to go down and sign a piece of paper that you're going to buy a living room suit or a bedroom suit when you cannot see already how you're going to pay for it without taking God's money to do it. It is sin. If I know what I'm talking about, and I think I do, the curse of the ministry is money. Now, most of you are not preachers. I'm not talking about preachers getting rich. Most preachers could make twice what they make if they put the same energy somewhere else. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the fact, however, that many preachers ruin the testimony because they do not pay their debts on time and run up debts and ruin the testimony of God because they're dishonest. And brother, listen, you're just as crooked as a bank robber if you don't pay your debts on time. And I'll say a word about that in a few minutes. But Dr. Bill Rice is in a certain city. There was a dentist there that was lost. The dentist, Dr. Bill Rice went to see him. And the dentist closed his office up and told his patients to go home. He wanted to talk to Dr. Rice. And he was converted in a minute. And Dr. Rice said, "Why haven't you been saved before?" He said, "I'm sick and tired of sitting out in that audience and looking at the choir and seeing half the choir that owes me dental bills that don't pay." Now, that is as crooked as any kind of bank robber or thief or any other kind of person ought to be in the penitentiary. Look, young couples especially, they put these things in the paper and say a dollar down and so much a month. You sometimes add up how much a month and how many months it is, and you see how much interest you're paying. A lot of these places, you're paying 30 and 40% interest. It ought to be against the law. And you don't even know it. You're not concerned how much you pay. All you're concerned about is getting it. You'll figure out how to pay for it later. And what you'll do, before you know it, you'll take holy money to pay for it, and God's going to hold you accountable for it. Don't make commitments you cannot fulfill. I think it's a wonderful idea. I think it's a wonderful idea to live by. I'm not sure I don't always live by it. But I think it's a wonderful idea, and I don't think it's wrong not to, but I think it's the safest plan not to buy anything on payment plan unless you have to. A car and a house are almost necessities in our generation. Now, there may be times you have to buy something else on credit. You pay it out. I've done it. I'm doing it right now. But I'll say this. I keep a cushion. I keep a cushion. And you all do the same thing. Be careful. Don't make commitments. Look, it'll ruin the testimony of the gospel. It'll ruin your chance to witness the people. And so, this is what it says. Now, two things about your money. Give God a tenth of it. I said kindly, but God said you're a crook if you don't. You're a robber. Will a man rob God? Malachi 3:8 through 10 said, "Yet ye have robbed me, yet ye say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and in offerings." And so, it's holy money. It's sacred money. Just like you taking this pulpit and chopping it up with an axe to take God's money. And then number two, it says, be careful about making obligations with the other 90%. Okay, let's go further. Down to verse, let's see where we're going to stop next time. Let's go on down to chapter 21 and verse 11. Chapter 21, verse 11. When the scorner is punished, the simple is made wise. And when the wise is instructed, he receiveth knowledge. Now here's what it says. I'll explain it, and I'll tell you what to write down. It says, when a person who scorns, a lawbreaker, a scorner, a crook, when he is punished, simple people learn from it. Well, shouldn't you learn from it? Yes, but there's a way to learn. People that are not simple learn a better way. Let's suppose, for example, how is it? Pontiac, Michigan last night preaching, and one of our boys, Roger Sykes, who is a miracle of grace, if I ever saw one. He's the principal of that big school system up there. He runs it. He's a big fella. Him and Roger, you know who he is? He's a big guy. And I said, "Roger, how do you keep this one in the school?" I said, "Do you really? Old-fashioned padding?" He said, "You better know it. I use a belt." So I got a belt, and I said, "Well, how do you discipline the girls?" "The high school girls." He said, "With the belt." Well, I was interested to know, how does a man take a gal and turn him over her knee, and how do you do it? And he said, "I just get the woman teacher to come in, and the gal just bends over the woman teacher. And I just take that belt off, and whack!" And he said, "I hit her as hard as I can swing," and that's pretty hard. And he said, "I hit her once." So the valedictorian of the senior class skipped school because she was sort of high class, you know, and she got it. And he said, "I just take it over again. Whack!" And said, "I do it the third time, three times. Whack!" And I said, "Well, look, don't you get tired doing that?" He said, "I don't do it often." He said, "They hear the noise in the office around the school, that going through the halls." He said, "They get the idea." He said, "Well, how are you for that? I couldn't be any more for it." America was a lot better off we paddled our kids at school. And we could have done it if some of you parents had won't paddle them at home and they go to parent and told the teacher to leave them alone. I'm dead sure for it. But they just, "I don't believe in it." Well, your crowd sure is making a mess of this generation. Now, what I'm saying is this. Simple people. Here's a fellow. He can't understand anything, but he can hear. Boy, he can feel it. Huh? That's what it says right here.
When the scorner is punished, in the Greek it says, when the valedictorian is spanked three times by a bell, the rest of the class behaves.
Now that's one way to learn. That's one way to learn. But listen, there's a better way to learn. The simple learn this way. See, it says the simple is made wise. Now notice, when the wise is instructed, he receiveth knowledge. You see what I'm saying? The simple has to learn with the bell. If you're wise, you'll learn without the bell. Now, it means that the parent and the school teacher and everybody else ought to be willing to use the bell, but the wise ones will listen to the whack. And that's all they'll need. They won't need a whack. They'll need to listen to it. Well, you're going to hide. You're going to hurt your little personalities. And it's not the personality you hit. But you're going to thwart their growth. Yeah, you go right ahead and don't thwart their growth, and they'll thwart 50,000 other people's growth. They'll break the laws and run over some kid on the street and kill him. Brother, if there's one thing in the Bible that it teaches that people who sin ought to be punished for it. That's all through the Bible. Same crowd doesn't believe, as I said before, doesn't believe this, doesn't believe in Vietnam. Same crowd doesn't believe in spanking, doesn't believe in the hell. They don't believe that God punishes sin. Now then, here's what I want you to write beside this. Number 124, or whatever it is, don't learn the hard way. Don't learn the hard way. Now, I think chastening is a good way to learn. But I think the better way to learn, if you're wise, you'll learn because of instruction. Now, here's what I'm saying, young people. I'm saying that if you go out and live in sin, and sow your wild oats, and have your fling, and learn the hard way, and come back and live right. That's good. You come back and live right. But I'm saying, if you'll listen to what Brother Howes is teaching you these Wednesday nights, you won't have to learn that way. Here's what the principal does. Roger said to me last night, he took me out to eat, and he said, "Now, Brother Jack, here's what I do. I stand up before the entire student body the first day of school, and I said, now you listen. If you don't behave, you're going to get it. Now, if you'll listen to my instructions, you won't have any trouble. But if you don't listen to my instructions, you're going to get it." Now, the wise listen to his instructions. They don't have to do bad. The simple have to get, they have to hear the whack. You see. Now, listen, that's why I'm teaching you. You don't have to go out and have your fling. Every once in a while, somebody says, "Well, every generation has to find out for itself." No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. There are enough people in this room tonight who've drunk their liquor and cursed and lived in sin and paid the price for it and living a life of remorse for it. For if you young folks had the sense of a nanny goat, you would listen to them and not have to pay the price they paid and do what they've done. Now listen to us. Listen to testimony of people that could get up all over this house and say to young people, many of you'd say, "Here in Ohio, listen to him." I was a kid, I didn't listen, and I went out and I sowed my wild oats, and I'm sorry, and I've got memories I can't forget, and I've got scars that'll never be healed, and wounds that won't be healed, and I'm living for God now, but if somebody just beat it in my thick skull as a kid. Now, you don't have to sow your wild oats. Listen to me. And listen to the others who've made the mistake. Many of you have not listened, and you've paid. In other words, you're the ones that the punishment did it for you. How many of you at Civil House, I've done some things I don't want the youth to do. Maybe you haven't gotten killed anybody or off anybody else's wife, but you've done some things you don't want the youth to do, and you'd like to testify to them tonight. They'd be a lot better off if they didn't learn the way you learned. They'd be a lot better off if they'd learned by listening, by instruction. Not be simple and have to learn with the spanking, but be wise and learn with the instruction. How many of you would like to go to the house? I've made the mistake that I don't want these young folks to make, some of them, and I hope they'll listen to you, and I want to show them tonight. Raise my hand as a testimony of it. Raise your hand, would you? All right. Young folks, look at it. Look, you hear me. Sin will never turn out right. Never will. Sin never turns out right. You hear me? Nobody has ever spent one real happy day in sin that didn't have to spend 10 miserable days for. Never have. It may look colorful. It may look bright. It may have a fleeting passion fulfillment.
but it won't turn out right. It never has turned out right. And would God we had enough sense to see it. Now listen, if you're wise, you'll learn by instruction and not by having to punish someday. That's what it says here. All right, let's go further. Look down to verse 16, please. The man that wandereth out of the way of understanding shall remain in the congregation of the dead. Now, I'm not going to go into that because it's a very deep verse, but here is the basic surface teaching. It is better not to have heard than to have heard and not to have done. It is better not to have heard than to have heard and not to have done. If you do not heed what we're teaching on Wednesday night, God will hold you so accountable, it would have been better had you not even come and heard what I'm teaching. My friends, and especially young friends, with added knowledge, there comes multiplied responsibilities. Did you get the statement? With added knowledge, there comes multiplied responsibilities. When you add twice as much knowledge, you don't have just twice as much responsibility. You've got multiplied responsibilities. That means the more you know, the more responsible you are. Here's a fellow goes to a church, never teach a soul winning course, nobody ever wins a soul, nobody knows how to win souls, he's never been taught how to win souls, he's not as accountable for not winning souls as you folks who said here in First Baptist are. Did you hear what I said? To whom much is given, more is expected. Now you, look, you know and I know that I'm not any genius of a orator. You know and I know I'm just ever giving you corn-fed stuff, but be it as it may, there's not one church in 1,000 where folks get what I'm teaching tonight. There's not one church in 1,000 where young people get shot at like I shoot at you. And because you're here, don't you go around just saying, I'm the First Baptist, I'm the fastest growing church in the world. You are. But while you go around being proud of it, you better be sure and realize that heavy, heavy hangs over your head. And you're going to be accountable for the fact that you sat under these teachings a week after week and month after month and sometimes year after year. And God's going to hold you more accountable for it. Now what it says here, the man that wandereth out of the way of understanding, that means he was in the way. He heard the way. He knows the way. There are young people tonight. Listen, you could have been born in a family that went to some of these liberal churches that are having square dances tonight instead of Bible study. But for the grace of God, you young people, you children, but for the grace of God, you could be at a bingo party tonight where they don't even believe the Bible in some church. And you're no better than they are. God just lets you get born in the kind of home where folks brought you to this house on Wednesday night. And because he did, God expects more from you. Don't you get proud because of what you are. You get humble because of what you ought to be, because of what you have. He that wandereth out. Now look down to verse 17. Boy, here's a verse. He that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. I'm going to stop right there for that one. He that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. Now that word pleasure is a very interesting word. It doesn't mean drinking liquor or committing adultery. It doesn't mean what we normally think of as being pleasure. It really comes from a word that means hunting and fishing. Huh? Think about that for a while. It doesn't mean just hunting and fishing, but the root word means hunting and fishing. What does it mean? He that loves hunting and fishing should be a poor man. Here's what it means. Write it down. Put pleasure in its proper perspective. Put pleasure in its proper perspective. How many of you ever known a fellow couldn't grow up? Got married and had kids, but he couldn't grow up. Still belonged to the motorcycle club. How many ever knew somebody like that? That's what it's talking about right here. He grew up, big fella, good looking. 9 times out of 10, he was spoiled rotten with his parents. That's the kind of crowd that does it. Had a motorcycle when he was 3. Mom and daddy went hungry to see that he got it. He cried one night and wouldn't go to sleep, so they got him a motorcycle to keep him from crying. His every request was his mother and father's desire. So he's no count, and he grows up, but he's not willing to accept responsibilities, and so pleasure stays the biggest thing in his life. Now look, when you're 5 and 6 years old, pleasure ought to be the biggest thing in your life. Play dolls, play cowboy and Indian,
play hopscotch, play mud fly, play Mr. and Mrs., play Mom and Daddy, play! But the older you get, the more the play slides back to the side, the more that the serious and the work comes to the forefront. You still ought to play when you grow up, but it ought not to be a big thing in your life. You know men that bowl. Now, there's a thing wrong with bowling. But you know men that bowl. They bowl 3 and 4 nights a week. Now, I'm not against bowling, but I am against growing up and not accepting the obligations and responsibilities of adulthood and maturity and spending all your time bowling. Same way as golf. Now, I play golf. I played golf, what, about 6 times, I guess, with you this year. Now, I'm a hideous golfer. The only thing that I play it for is so I get so nervous playing it, it's relaxation to get back to work. It makes me so tense. I like to get back to work and get my mind off my golf. Now, I've played golf about 6 times this year. Now, I could play every day, and you could play twice a day. He's a real golfer. Now, really, he is. He's one of the finest golfers I've ever seen for a fellow that only plays 3 times a day. And but he's a real golfer. Now, here's what I'm saying. A person can get to the place where his hobbies become so big that he's immature. You can do the same thing with a carpenter set. You can do the same thing with a fishing pole. I think that we ought to have enough pleasure to keep us as healthy as possible. And enough relaxation to keep us doing our main work the best. But keep it in its perspective. You ladies have the same problem. I mean, you've got a hobby. You just love it. And the girls have much fun. And I'm not against it. It's all right. Everybody ought to have some fun. And I have a lot of fun. But pleasure ought not to be the big thing in life. And right here, a lot of people never grow up mature because they never do find out the purpose for pleasure. Pleasure is release. It's the entree. It's the hors d'oeuvre. I mean, it's hors d'oeuvre, not the entree. It's the salad, not the meat. It's the iced tea, not the beefsteak. Keep it in its proper perspective. More young couples, not more, but many young couples have trouble, right? They get married and the fellow won't settle down. He wants to go out, and then they say this too. It's a good idea when you get married to quit running around with the old crowd, the single crowd. Married folks ought to run with married folks and single folks with single folks. It's not a good idea for some fellow to get married and spend every other night, or one night a week for that matter, with the single crowd he used to run with. You're a man now! Grow up and be a man. Your girls, the same thing ought to be true with you. All right, let's go further. Now, I'm never against bowling. You understand that. And I'm glad you play golf. And I'm glad you fish or whatever you do. I'm not against it, but I do think that that we ought to be mature enough to know how to put it in its proper perspective. All right. Now let's go further. Where are we? We're going now down to chapter 22 and verse 1. All the rest of chapter 21 is somewhat repetitious of what we've learned. Now here's a good chapter. Chapter 22 is a wonderful chapter. A good name is rather to the chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver or gold. I checked that word, the word good name, it's one word in the original. I checked the word good name, and it comes from a word that has to do with credit. Credit. So just write down, young people, number 120, whatever it is, write down, always have good credit. Always have good credit. Did you know that a good credit, a good name, is worth more to you than a lot of money? Now why? Listen carefully. If you've got a good name, that means you've got friends, right? And if you've got a good name, you can get the money if you have to have it. And you've got the friends and the money. If you just got the money without the good name, you can't get the friends. You can't borrow a friend's money. Did you hear me? You cannot buy with your money a good name. You can use your good name to get you all the money you need. Now listen, if you'll hear that, you'll learn something. If you've got a lot of money and want a good name, you can't buy it. If you've got a good name, you can get the money. When I came to heaven, when I go to any new town, I go to the bank and borrow some money. Got off of that. My uncle taught me this. Got off of that. I borrow some money. How far? So I can pay it back right away. Why? So I can build a credit rating. Immediately. Always do. Go down to the bank, borrow $100, pay it off in a week. Go down and borrow $200, pay it off in a week. Later borrow $300, pay it off in a week. Or $400, pay it off in a week. You can live in a town 10 years, never borrow a dime, and you might have a problem borrowing some money. But I'm helping you, if you listen to me. This is not as interesting as the cross or the second coming. But a lot of you wouldn't have to look for the second coming as hard as you'd pay your debt. I mean, the only hope a lot of you've got to be now in the first of the month of rapture. That's the only hope you've got. You're laughing on the outside, but you're crying underneath. Look, it doesn't mean everybody ought to like you, but it means everybody ought to know this. That's the fellow right there that he pays his debts. Everybody, they think that about you? There's a fellow right there that pays his debts. There's a man out there, you can count on him. You let him borrow $1 for a week and you'll have it in less than 7 days. Now you, listen, you have that. If you cannot make money, you have a good name. If you cannot do anything else, you have a good name and a good credit rating. And be sure that everybody in town, if they hate your insides, they know that you will be honest and keep your word about your money. A good name is rather the chosen than great riches. And loving favor rather than silver and gold. Verse 2, the rich and poor meet together. The Lord is maker of them all. This is the one Mother taught me, I guess as much as anything she ever taught me. Write it down. Look straight at everybody. I don't know how many times my mother said to me, son, you're as good as anybody on the street. I'd walk down the street, I've got eyes, I can see patches in knees. And then I got eyes, I could look at my shoes and see razor blade split over the toes. And I got eyes, I can see those fellows didn't have them. And Mother said to me, son, when you walk down the street, how many times you said this, Mother? Again and again. Son, you are as good as anybody. She said, throw your shoulders back. Throw your chest out. Don't look up to anybody. And then she said, don't look down to anybody. Don't look down. If you're the fellow who's got the good shoes on. And that's one reason why. That I, listen, nobody ever walks in the door of that church. Nobody. Fellow walked down the alley a while ago. He's probably here right now. I don't know. But he's smoking a cigarette. Yes, he is here. I saw him. He's smoking a cigarette. Walked down the alley. He was not clothed like most of us are clothed. Most churches wouldn't welcome him. He looked at me and said, where's the church? He said, I heard there's a church around here. And I said, go to the sidewalk and go down a few feet. You'll come to the door and come in. Now to me, I told him how to get here just like I told a fellow who'd come in a big blue serge suit driving a Cadillac. I'm no better than he is by nature. And the fellow that's driving the Cadillac's no better than I am by nature. When you get around rich people, do you feel inferior? Well, quit it. Look them square in the eye. You get around folks poorer than you are, do you feel superior? Quit it. Look them square in the eye. Look everybody straight in the eye. Down to none, up to none. What it means. The rich and poor meet together. The Lord is maker of them all. Verse 3. Now here's one I want you parents to listen to very carefully because I'm going to drive a nail in your coffin here. A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself. I want you to think about it. Prudent means wise. A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself. What does it mean? It means this old song and dance about, well, let's let our kids go to these worldly schools because you can't shelter them all their lives. That means that dog won't hunt. Young people, you're not old enough yet to go out and change the world.
You're not old enough yet to go out and change a big worldly university.
But you say, Brother House, how are we going to help them? We're going to help them like the Bible says, help them. We're going to go house to house and help them. Doesn't mean you're supposed to eat with them, go to school with them. The average young person that's 17, 18, 19 years of age is not ready to be thrown out to the wolves yet. And the parents who let their children go off to wicked schools because they want their children to help the school. I've never seen a school yet change by a student like that, but I've seen hundreds of students with their faith wrecked. Look at it again. A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself. That means when you see something evil coming, hide from it. Don't brag on the fact you can look in the eye and not take it. A fellow said to me, that I'm going to quit smoking. Here's the way I'm going to do it. I'm going to put a cigarette right up here. I'm going to say, I don't need you. I don't want you. Now he's chewing. Now, you may have heard somebody that did that one time, but brother, he's in the big minority. The fellow that 99% of folks that quit smoking cigarettes, they run from them when they see one. If they smoke, they don't even get around a smokestack. 99% of them that smoke and quit smoking, they leave it alone. They hide from it. They run from it. Man's going to quit liquor. He doesn't go down to the beer joint and look at the beer. Said, I just want to let you know, an old bottle I can take you or leave you. And he always takes it. The same thing's true about young people. Young friends, you hear me. That's why you ought to come to church again and again and again and make your friends the Christian friends and the best friends and shelter yourself, as it were, from the world as long as you can till you get a faith and a foundation so strong the world and the devil and his angels can't shake it. One reason why the longer I live, the more I'm getting for Christian education. And the less tolerance I get for people that talk more about so-called accredited schools than they do so-called Christian schools. Brother, listen, I believe if a school's accredited, well and good, but I 10,000 times rather have my child in a school that's not accredited with man, but accredited with God. Now, if you send your school kids off some of the school, I'm going to like you. I'm going to love you. If you send them over to the University of Chicago to take Bible, I'm going to love you. You're going to have a hole in your head. But I'm going to love you. But I'm going to pray God to give you some sense. I've got four children. My children have had the Bible read to them and prayer offered for them, I guess, every day of their lives and sometimes more than once a day. We take, when I'm at home, I'm going, I'm sure they do the same thing. When I'm at home, we don't take 10 minutes for family devotions. We take 20 to 25 to 30 minutes. And we've done our best. I've tried to teach my kids integrity and honesty and uprightness. But I'm still not ready to say they can go out and face an ungodly, atheistic, evolution-teaching world yet. I wrote my daughter a little letter. I wouldn't tell you what was in it, but I wrote a little letter. She went to high school this year, and I said, I want to tell you one thing on many of them. One thing is, your daddy's as smart as any teacher at that school. Without a teacher at that school, your daddy couldn't tie knots if you had a chance to argue with him about evolution. And I said, it's all theory. I said, I want to remind you one thing. You believe the Bible and the Word of God, and if you have any trouble, you come to your daddy. He'll take care of your trouble. God give us some people that will realize these boys and girls, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, even 20, they need to be reminded time and time and time again about the way to live and what to believe. A prudent man foreseeth the evil. And if you don't like that, check the Bible. A prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself. But the simple pass on. The simple just keep on going and are punished. What does it mean? The simple say, I can take it. They go ahead and keep walking, and they get punished. They suffer for it. Verse 6, the last verse for tonight. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Now, here's what that means. That means take a child
and show him the way he should go. It does not mean the way he should go. It means show him the way he should go. Train up a child. In the original language, it does not say, teach him how he should go. It means, by your own example, show him how he should go. And he'll, when he's old, he'll not depart. Now, it doesn't say he won't come, he'll depart. Somebody says, well, I reared my daughter right. And I know she's going to come back, because the Bible says, train up a child the way he should go. When he's old, not depart. Doesn't say he'll depart and come back. It said he won't depart. He won't depart. And so I want to say to young people, guess about that verse. Don't depart. Just don't depart. To you parents, be the kind of example. Show your teenagers and your boys and girls the way they should go by looking at you. I want to live the kind of life, and I hope by God's grace I can. I want to live the kind of life where if my boy baby decided to go everywhere his daddy went, use every word his daddy used, drink everything his daddy drank, thought everything his daddy thought, said everything his daddy said, heard everything his daddy heard, he'd be a decent citizen, a decent Christian. I'm not going to tell my boy, you do this while I do this. I'm going to say, you do what I do. Train him up. Show him the way you ought to go. When he's old, he won't depart from it. I got some bad news for you. We have about a 5-minute business meeting. Okay, Brother Clark, come on. You're the most hated man in this church. Our Father's help.